Now, press 2. Blog Talk Radio.
In all sense, to the presentation of anarchism as social philosophy which aims at the emancipation, economic, social, political, and spiritual of the universe.
Those who shift from the goal of its dedication towards liberation of the human race, we present to you the Ethorian Stash. Your favorite anarchist radio show, the radical analysis of the news, reports from the front lines of the struggle, and a healthy reminder of what is freedom, this land of confusion. Join us Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, where you can call in to ask questions, tip us off to action in your area, or just tell us what's on your mind. Let the authority smash begin.
Hello everyone, once again to the Authority Smashing Hour, your daily anarchist radio show on the internet. Tonight with your host Charnchi, also known as Chomskin, and Mr. 1001 Nights. And I want to wish everyone a happy new year. I myself started the new year with a cold, feeling like absolute crap, but I'm expecting that the year will get a little bit better as we go forward. So, how was your New Year's, man?
It was okay. Didn't do very much. This afternoon, we had this hockey game outdoors. It's called Winter Classics.
Nice.
And they set up, once a year, they set up this huge stadium and play hockey outdoors. So, this year was in Boston, and my favorite team was in it, the Flyers. So I went and watched it, and cool. It's okay.
Cool. Fine. Yeah. I guess that we can sort of extend what we were trying to do last show, which is to explain some of the main ideas of anarchism. And sure. We're trying to do that, but we got involved with different squabbles about smaller ideas of anarchism. We had different callers, Buddha Jam, Joey, etc. So, we didn't cover all that stuff, but I guess we could. And
it wasn't squabbles, though, right? It was just people with different opinions.
Yeah, it was people of different opinions. They were talking about subjects that were relevant to anarchism, but it was not the sort of explanation that I was seeking to give. Somebody's asking on the chat room what we think of Mickey Z. I haven't read his blog for a while. He's been a pretty interesting guy, I think. He's an anarcho-syndicalist, so it'd be nice to actually have him on the show. I think he's a vegan as well.
Yeah.
Do you know who he is?
We might make that happen.
What's that?
I know of him. He writes for Z-Man a lot. I haven't followed his work that closely, so I can't really comment. But I'm sure we could get him on. That'd be fun.
Somebody just posted his website on the chat room. So he's always got these funny little pictures and stuff on his posts, which makes it kind of fun.
Yeah, there's one on Blue Stockings.
Right.
It's an anarchist bookstore in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's cool.
Pretty cool stuff. Anyway, so I guess I'll start by thanking the listeners giving out the number. You can call in if you want. The number is 646-716-8106. That is 646-716-8106. Ask questions, make comments, anything you want. So let's start out with describing, what anarchism is and what are some of the good sources of information we can find on anarchism. I always refer people to the Anarchist FAQ at infoshop.org because it's an effort that has taken, you know, about 10 years to complete. And now, in fact, they have the first book that came out of the Anarchist FAQ, the first half. And that's pretty pretty good stuff. It basically analyzes anarchism from different perspectives. It criticizes the current system, capitalism, the state, state socialism, historical events, so-called anarcho-capitalism, etc., etc. In fact, I think that the Anarchist FAQ started out as a critique of so-called anarcho-capitalism, because, as you guys probably know, there is a strand of people that call themselves anarchists who subscribe to capitalism, wage labor, bosses, etc., etc. And what we've always thought is that hierarchy is the central sort of contention here, because they don't oppose hierarchy. They oppose simply hierarchy if it comes from the state. But what is the state and how it developed? That's something that it's been pretty well documented. The state, the modern state, grew out of the rise of capitalism. I mean, states before were slightly different, right? You had feudalism, you had a monarchy, but the modern state, I mean, in fact, I think it was Kropotkin who pointed out that parliament, modern parliament, started out as basically capitalists who were trying to compete with the power of the king. And so they set up this counterbalanced force called parliament. And the modern state is basically the collective regulator of capitalism. You have different parties representing primarily different sectors of industry, they battle it out when you have a democracy. And if you don't have a democracy, then you have one party. And labor is always there, whether it's weak or strong, pressuring the powers that be to become a little more benevolent, a little less brutal, a little less exploitative. But that's the basic setup. Are you familiar with the Anarchist FAQ, Charnshi?
Sure, but I haven't read a lot of that. I came to anarchism through some other sources, but it's an interesting read. Like you said, a lot of it attempts to answer some of the anarcho-capitalist claims, which is useful, because when I first got onto YouTube, that's when I first came in contact with the anarcho-capitalist. And, you know, some of the critiques, when you first hear it, it sounds vaguely radical, you know, until you really look into the implications. And
right.
So it's a good resource from that. But yeah, I think the second volume is supposed to come out pretty soon.
Yeah,
I overheard the AK people talk about it.
I have the first volume, and I have to say that even though it's online, it's nice to have it in book form. You can take it to places. You can. It's just different reading out of a book. And I think that this process of renaming things, which is always going on, a lot of it has to do with power structures. Because remember that power structures, power systems, always try to use language for their advantage. So they try to, you know, I mean, take, say, the word concentration camp, right? If you think of it, you know, without... Now we know what it means, but before, prison camp was substituted for concentration camp, so it was a euphemism. So basically sort of like enemy combatant, or I mean just any sort of like words that are... But, you know, in time, people of course came to identify the euphemism concentration camp with what it really is, a prison camp with brutal conditions. And so it's a constant process of double speak and then trying to correct that double speak. And with a lot of terms that threaten the status quo, that has been the case. So, for example, socialism, which originally meant workers' control of the means of production, now it means some sort of state elite controlling the means of production and determining everyone's life. Okay, so that's the, so now if you try to bring up about democracy in the workplace, what you're really trying to bring about is a state dictatorship that will deprive freedom, right? Now, what's the purpose of doing that? Now, well, now we have two choices. We either submit to the will of the capitalist and to his exploitation, or we get Stalin. Now you got to choose. Do you want Stalin or do you want to be exploited by your boss? Well, you know, of course, I'll take the boss, right? I don't want to get murdered in the gulag. I mean, so that's the idea. The idea is to bring about a false dichotomy of choices. Now you're gonna have to choose the capitalist boss because he's the only alternative. I mean, and then of course it's human nature, and in fact, our very language, you know, has been shaped to the sort of pattern of capitalism. So now, you know, we talk about everything has a price with the cost. It's like everything is sort of in market terms, in terms of what the material cost is. It's a very pervasive sort of cultural influence. So we see it in language, and that, you know, since we express ourselves in language, it was Orwell who pointed out that, you know, it comes a time if you distort language enough where you can't even have words to express certain thoughts because language has been so. So I mean, let's say today, if you want to talk about workers and control of the means of production, right? Like workers' democracy. Now you can't use the word socialism because immediately people are going to think, oh, it's Big Brother, you know, coming to, you know, take, you know, kill your grandmother. Right, so you can't use the word socialism. Okay, do you use the word syndicalism? People don't even know what it is, right? Do you use the word anarchism? Oh, anarchism, you mean somebody throwing bombs at somebody? Okay, no, right? You can't use any words. I mean, the capitalists have succeeded in eliminating from public consciousness a word that means workers control the means of production. Now, you can attempt to use the word democracy, but then they'll say, hey, but isn't democracy what we have now, where you can vote for Obama or, you know, McCain? Isn't that democracy? You see, every single word has been shaped to their advantage. There is not even a word right now in the public consciousness to express this particular thought of workers' control. And the same thing can be said about other ideas and other radical thoughts. So that's the way power systems work, and I suspect that you know, this little battle, you know, we tend to be pretty sectarian sometimes in anarchism. So there's been a very, very vigorous debate with these free market capitalist in the Rothbard variety, the Mises variety, and you know, I myself have engaged in hours of debate with these folks. So, but I guess we can start out talking about some aspect of anarchism, and we have another caller on the line, so maybe he can chime in. Let's see who this is. Hello? What's your name? Well, we have another number here, but nobody's saying anything. So I guess we will just wait. Anyway, so is there any aspect of anarchism do you think it's is crucial to understand before anything else? Do you think there's something that we should start with?
I don't know what you had in mind. You go right ahead.
Well, I guess we could just take the. Okay, if we go to the anarchist FAQ, right? Let's go to section B. And go to the introduction. There's a part in which they talk about how says anarchists realize that the power of governments and other forms of hierarchy depend upon the agreement of the governed. Fear is not the whole answer. It is far more, quote, because the oppressed subscribe to the same values as their governors. Rulers and ruled alike believe in the principle of authority, of hierarchy, of power. And there is where we see the concept of manufacturing consent. That is, it's kind of harsh to say this, but in some, we play a very important role in our own oppression. You know, we agree to the same ideology, to the same fundamental ideas. that constitute our own oppression. If you ask some of these, David was talking about it. He was talking with his fellow workers. He's a construction worker, as you know, and he was talking with his fellow workers, and they were basically supporting the actions of the government. In Guantanamo, they were, he just raised the issue that maybe these people ought to be charged with some crime before they're imprisoned. A totally reasonable idea. And these guys were saying, hey, you seem a little sympathetic there to these terrorists. Oh, so if the government says something, it must mean it's true, right? If the capitalists have the power, it means they deserve it, that they earned it, right? I mean, that's the sort of irrational, self-justifying nature of our system, where ultimately it's as a belief in an irrational authority, the irrational legitimacy of the powers that be. And so that's a big part of it. And to, you know, make people believe that the powers that be somehow represent some immutable law of nature. I mean, Karl Marx pointed this out, that the capitalists, one of the things they did was to, you know, propagate the notion that their rule was human nature. Hey, this is human nature. But of course, you can always point out, hey, but we didn't have capitalism for most of human history. In fact, we didn't even have civilization for most of human history. So how can one say that any one particular economic structure or power structure is human nature or represents some sort of immutable human nature, at least? Well, that's nonsense. It's a very convenient way of saying, keep allowing me to exploit you because, you know, it's human nature that I should be sitting here enjoying my cigar while you are working and letting, you know, allowing me to exploit you. So yeah, I think that the attempt to counter the lies of the system, the things that we know at some level that they're not true, I think that's a very strong sort of impulse, at least in my case. It's like I started seeing all these things where I thought, this is not true. It may start out with something small. It may be something like religion. You think, well, you know, maybe God doesn't exist. Maybe that's not true. And then you go on from there. Was that also your experience where you maybe doubted? I know you didn't have a Christian upbringing. I mean, I went to a Catholic school for 8 years, and you come from a Chinese background, which is a little different, right, Tarnchi?
Yeah, I actually came from a very, a minority sectors in the Chinese culture, in the Chinese population, which we're kind of... I don't know, fundamental Taoist, classical Taoist. And so in that sense, I already had this kind of primitivist position, you know, coming in. But it just didn't have any modern articulation. So I didn't understand how power and structure worked in the modern, you know, context. So I came from where, you know, we reject everything, you know, F civilization and all that stuff, you know, let's try to transcend it, let's, work off large principles, you know, like deep principles and, you know, all that stuff. So for me, it was kind of the reverse, you know, like I had to learn how power worked and understand that you can't just take that leap, you know, you can't just say, oh, F everything, right? You have to, and also, you know, to be morally consistent, you have to kind of work at it instead of just try to blow everything up. So my experience is a little different, you know.
So now that we've established sort of what brings people to anarchism, let's sort of describe what anarchism is, or what a broad consensus about some aspects of anarchism, what they are. And I'll quote Chomsky here: to seek out and identify structures of authority, hierarchy, and domination in every aspect of life, and to challenge them. Unless a justification for them can be given, they are illegitimate and should be dismantled to increase the scope of human freedom. That includes political power, ownership and management, relations among men and women, parents and children, our control over the fate of future generations, and much else. So there you have it. That's what anarchism is about, and it makes sense. It's not rejecting all authority. It's rejecting authority that does not, is not open to challenge. Authority that is illegitimate. And obviously, a cynic would say, "Hey, but we think the authority of George Bush and Bill Gates is legitimate." Well, maybe you think so, but do you think that if all those bumps out there and all those poor people had a vote on whether or not to use Bill Gates' money or George Bush's money and power to build houses instead of something else, they wouldn't? No, I mean, the thing is that we don't have a vote on economic issues. That was actually the fear of the founding fathers of American government. That they said, look, if they were talking about England, and they said if these peasants had a vote, they would vote to get some of the land. See, now you can vote for anybody you want, but if you can't vote to distribute the land, you know, what's the point? After all, political power, you know, largely comes from your grip over the resources. If I own half the land in a country, and you own nothing, you can vote for somebody. So what? I'm going to control the whole process, and that's in fact what I try to. I'm plugging in my documentary again, but that's what I try to show in Golden Rule, the investment theory of politics. That, you know, it's sort of a very well known truth that if you are in control of the economic resources, you have tremendous political power. So
you always manage to get it in.
Always, man. Hopefully somebody else will buy it. Yeah, I need some of that capital myself. Not to become a capitalist. Not to become a capitalist, but to maybe pay rent here. Pay the capitalist for a place to live. Which is not cheap in San Francisco, let me tell you. I don't know if you've ever been down here. It's even more expensive than Boston, which is not cheap either. So anyway, so that's what anarchism is. And, I guess the next question would be...
Well, that's a large overview of anarchist principles, but, you know, there are a lot of variants, right? Don't you allow variants?
Right. I mean, there are variants within the... I mean, that's the principle that sort of unites all these different strands of anarchism, including, right. And somebody's calling me on the other line. Why don't you talk for a little bit, okay? I'll be back in a minute. Oh no! Actually, sorry. It's fine.
What's going on?
Somebody was just calling me on the other line. Anyway, let's talk about how does statism and capitalism affect society? What are the ways in which it affects society? We started out talking about, say, how the powers that be, you know, they manipulate language to their own advantage. And, you know, now we can talk about how the state and capitalism develop together. I mean, why, if somebody asks you, Charnshi, why do you think the state and capitalism develop together? What does the capitalist have to gain from having a state? What would your answer be?
Well, the state protects their quote-unquote private property rights. I mean, it has to exist in order for them to maintain that. I mean, that's the way I kind of see it, you know. But, you know, the right-wing anarchists sees it reverse. You know, they think that the state gives private concentrations of power, that power, but it's actually, you know, well, how do you see it?
Well, I think that's a pretty good description that the capitalist needs a state to protect his property. I mean, if the workers, when the workers strike, say, when the workers, you know, all you have to do, I mean, I had this battle at Wikipedia, and I just battled it out for a few weeks to try to put the word property there, because the police, you know, one of the main functions of the police is to protect property, if not their main function. And maintain order. You know, they say that we have to maintain order. You know, what order are we talking about? Well, we have a certain order, an elite order in our society. Property is not evenly distributed, obviously. So if you protect property, you protect an unevenly distributed property. And that means you protect hierarchy. So that's the main function of the state, protecting the capitalist. And also, but that's not the only function. Remember, the capitalism is a very, very antisocial sort of a outcome. And therefore, the state is there to try to alleviate some of those antisocial sort of results of capitalism. The reason for that is that, you know, capitalism needs some stability to be viable. And of course, we have this school of capitalism, which I think is more realistic, which is called Keynesian or post-Keynesian capitalism, which, you know, you have all these economists who actually recognize that, yes, the business cycle, the bumps and slumps of capitalism, all these antisocial sort of byproducts of capitalism, those are inherent in the system. It's not some sort of external force imposing these events. And so they realize, you know, capitalism needs strong state intervention. They need state regulation to they need state employment in order to you know, stimulate the economy, etc., etc. And that's basically what a more realistic appraisal of capitalism does. It realizes it's an unstable system, it's an antisocial system, and to regulate it, we need state intervention, partly because the state at least is subject to some sort of economic, democratic influence, and the state does not have the same profit imperative as the corporations or the businesses that control the economy. So you need you know, state intervention in that regard. So obviously it's not that we are stuck with either state or a capitalist control. We, you know, we can have a more pure democratic institution, like say a real democratic union or syndicate or a federation. But obviously, within the current paradigm, the state has more democratic potential than the corporation, say. The public can influence state policy to some extent, but the corporations are accountable to their stockholders, and the consumer system is a $1 one vote consumer system, which is actually very, very much you know, stimulated in our economy, where you are sort of pushed in the direction of consumerism. You got to consume more, you got to buy more, because that's where happiness is. You know, you don't have control at your workplace. Your relationships are falling apart because you're working two jobs. You're not you know, you're not having you know, a life that's conducive to healthy relationships. So what do? You get depressed. You take antidepressants. You buy more stuff. And that's basically the sort of pattern that we have. That, you know, have an erosion of community, materialistic values. So the state brings about some stability in the system, regulates prices, regulates you know, all these things I'm talking about. So that's sort of and the state always you know, has this sort of dual character. On the one hand, it has this ameliorating effect in which, you know, it improves the conditions a little bit, brings about some stability, maybe even allows the public to democratically have some say, and at the same time, it protects the capitalist. So it's this sort of dual role of the state. And of course, here we differ a little bit with the Marxist. They think that the state is sort of the dictatorship of the proletariat. The state is a tool of the working class. And what we anarchists think is that the state you know, so far as it has a democratic potential, that's a good thing. That, you know, in fact, we should rely on the state in the short term. But ultimately, the state, we believe, is a means by which a minority controls a majority, and therefore, we want to get rid of both capitalism and the state, and institute sort of a society based on federations, workers' councils, consumer councils, assemblies, etc., etc. Yeah, so we have a few minutes before the break, and I want to encourage anyone who wants to call in to do so. And we have a caller on the line. See who this is. Let me
Hey
see.
guys.
Hey, who is this?
Hey, what's up? This is Ron from Philadelphia.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, Ron. How's it going, guys? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, man.
Okay. Basically, my one question, or I don't know if it's a question or a comment. Now, I don't mean to be off topic either. This isn't really about what you were just talking about. But I have a friend on Facebook who is absolutely convinced that 9/11 was an inside job, etc. And I've tried talking with him about, you know, the structural issues in our society from like more of an anarchist perspective. And I'm not saying I don't believe that it's an inside job or there's some kind of shady things going on, but I'm not totally as into it as he is. And I showed him the video of Chomsky talking about this. Have you guys seen that? The video where Chomsky, So I showed him that video, and I said to him, "Well, look, even if it was an inside job, what Chomsky said is right. Like, who cares? Like, really, I mean, honestly, comparatively, far less people were killed during 9/11 than who our military has killed over the years." And my only question is there any way to find some common ground with these people who are absolutely, you know, dead serious, and they're 100% convinced that our government is evil, and, you know, there's FEMA camps everywhere and all this kind of stuff, which I'm not saying, I mean, I don't trust the government either. I wouldn't put it past them to have these type of nefarious schemes or whatever. But how do you find common ground with these people, you know, from an anarchist perspective?
Well, I mean,
Question.
my view would be that, and I have a liberal friend, older than me as well, so it's I feel it's a little bit harder to convince him. But you know, I basically try to point out, look, the U.S. government has been criminal for many, many years, not just 9/11. Let's say that it was true. I mean, would the U.S. stop being an imperialistic or, you know, criminal force around the world if it weren't for 9/11? You could say that it provided the sort of excuse for a lot of these things, but if you take away that, you know, will they not be able to manufacture consent in some other ways? Shouldn't we look at the real root cause of the evil, not just and you know, when you point that out, it's hard because a lot of them are do not believe that the United States has always been like this. They say, well, this is recent. We were a good country. Look, we did all these good things around the world. Of course, all of that is debatable. I mean, there's a lot of evidence that, you know, the U.S. has been screwing the third world for a long time, for example. But so you just have to, you know. You have to, I mean, in my view, just don't focus on it, you know, especially if they don't bring it up. Don't bring it up yourself, because, you know, it's gonna make things worse. I mean, what's been your strategy, Charnji, here, dealing with these people?
I just kind of, I tell them, you know, there are like very surface crimes that you could see on the everyday news, you know, in the papers or whatever. And they're very obvious. You don't need to dig into whatever archives, or you don't need to analyze some videotape and, you know, thermite and all that stuff. You can do very surface structural analysis, and you can see all these crimes. And, you know, those are very immediate, you know, and very clear. You don't need to try to go all, you know, like some kind of a mystery game,
Let
you
me
know.
just give you a
So let's focus on those things, you know,
let me just give you one
like
example.
effect.
I'm sorry, Charnji, go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just giving an example. About 50,000 workers die every year in the United States from work-related injury and illness. Every year, okay? And that's more than 911. Now, wouldn't we be better off saying, look, why do you think the government, our government, a liberal government, any government, does not spend trillions of dollars going to war with the system that is killing many times more people than 911 just on this particular issue? I mean, if we talk depression and we talk, obesity, we talk about all these different problems of capitalism, then we're talking about many more people. Just focus on this particular issue, work-related injury and illness. 50,000 workers die every year. Many more are maimed or are sick, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if you ask the question, why doesn't our government or any government focus on this rather than on the 3,000 people of 911, which we have evidence that their wars were not intended to decrease terrorism. In fact, they have increased it. So therefore, it's something else. But even if they were, why is it that our government does this? And shouldn't we pay more attention to these other crimes, which are, they're sort of conspiracies as well? I mean, because they are conspiring to increase profit at the expense of the workers, you know? And so it's tough. It's tough because you're facing an ideological sort of wall there. But we have to keep pushing, man. Anyway, we have about
two.
Go ahead.
My last point was just, I think I actually said this before the show, but that's why I think your show is so important, is because there's people like Alex Jones out there who are on, I think he's on the air for 4 hours a day now, plus his YouTube channel. And I think you've mentioned this Obama video he has about how Obama's evil and all this kind of stuff. Millions of hits on that. We have to start trying to combat these things somehow. And I think your show is a good way to do that. So, yeah.
Well, keep up the good work. Thank you. Thanks a lot. So we have another two callers in the line. So let's go to the next caller. Hello. What's your name? Hello?
Hey, this is Woodman.
Hey, Woodman.
How are you guys?
Pretty good, man.
Good.
You know, I was just kind of having a comment tonight with a family member. You know, I need to take the bull by the horns in the new year a little bit. And I said, you know, it's not like I haven't been, but there's just so many strings attached to our society right now. And I'd like to know what I can be doing differently, you know, so I'm not being controlled by, you know, the government or international bankers or in the events of 9/11 or what have you. And I says, you know, that's what I've been trying to do all along. I says, but short of being like a lawyer or a politician, I'm pretty much rendered powerless, it seems like. I mean, I stay active with the party. I've been to conventions, you know, did everything that I possibly could. But I don't know that I'm literally in charge of my own life anymore, it seems like. And, you know, I think that's part of why I wanted to call in. I need to start doing something a little bit more different. Maybe I need to be more boisterous. But your last caller called up about 9/11 and Noam Chomsky. And I think it's important to talk about these kinds of issues. I believe that 9/11 was an inside job. I believe what Noam Chomsky talked about, that was his way of saying that it's time to move on and make sure that we never go this route again. We as humanity need to change. But I believe that that was Noam Chomsky's way of talking, basically saying that 9/11 was an inside job, even though he said something different. And I think the reasons why we're running into these kind of problems right now is because we don't do anything to hold our government accountable.
Right.
I think that we need to be talking about these kinds of issues because it's time to start holding our government accountable. And I would even say that about 9/11. We need to hold them accountable because we can't keep moving another 10 or 20 or 30 years down the road as a result of them not being held accountable for what they did.
Yeah, I always try to encourage people to engage in acts of resistance, even if they're small. So, you know, for example, I know where you are, but you know, if you go to Indie Media, or say in the Bay Area here in California, you go to Indie Bay, or if you're in New York, they have their own website there, and they have a calendar, and they have certain events, and it may be sometimes it's 9/11, they're protesting the inside job, or they're protesting the Israel-Palestine issue, or they are organizing for something else. So if you look at that calendar, you may actually find some events you may want to attend if you have some free time, and just find people who are interested in these kinds of the same kind of issues and the same kind of concerns, and that's a good step forward, I think. I mean, we're thinking about the same things you're thinking about. We want to do something to change the world, and that's what we're doing this radio show. And it's not an easy question to answer, but the one thing that is certain is that we have more opportunities than other countries, because we still have some freedoms, we still have some ways of going forward and changing things to the better. It's true the bankers have a lot of power. It's true the government is in the pockets of all these financial institutions, but we can still make a difference, and so. You know, I'm glad you called, man.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, Sarchi.
Yeah, so I understand your concern, and it's something that we deal with all the time, and I think everybody feels powerless, by ourselves. And I think it's part of the alienation that the system, imposes on people. And I think one of the tasks is to go against that. So, building a community, that's part of it. That's what we're trying to do here. I mean, look at the chat room. It's hopping right now. And, just this small act of building a community, you get to bounce your ideas off of each other and support each other. And I think that's part of, what can lead to other things. And the second thing about 9/11, I think it's kind of an inside job, but, in a bigger picture. So, there are structural reasons why it happened, U.S. imperialism so we need to take a look at the large picture and not just focus very narrowly on some, mystery that might be very sexy and interesting, but I don't know if it has any utility. I think it's a distraction, but if that's something that gets you going, then
I think Charnchi and the listener, I forgot your name, what's your name?
Woodman.
Yeah, Woodman. That very often it doesn't have to be one or another cause. Once you get involved and start becoming used to being active in thinking about these issues or protesting or whatever, then I think that's a good step forward. So even though I'm skeptical on some of these issues, I think that anybody who's concerned about the world we live in is already going in a good direction. So anyway, thank you very much for calling, and we have another caller on the line. So let me see.
All right.
Thank you. Oops, sorry about that.
Thank you, man.
Thank you. Let me see who this is. Whoops. Let me see. Hello?
Hey, guys.
Buttigieg?
Hey, Buttigieg.
What's up, David?
How's it going?
What's up, fellas? Hey, I really liked the last call you guys just took. That was cool.
Yeah, yeah. Happy New Year, by the way.
Yeah, 2010. Crazy.
Yeah, it's been 10 years. I still remember when it was the year 2000. And wow, a whole decade.
The world was supposed to end, right? The Y2K stuff.
Yeah, now it's going to end in 2012, right?
That's what I hear. But 2000 was when Bush was elected. Remember that? The year 2000 is when George W. Bush was elected. And
selected. Don't you mean selected?
Right. Selected by the elite. Right. Right.
Yeah. Supreme Court appointed him, I think. Right.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. It was in 2000. In 2000, it was Gore, and then 2004, it was Kerry. Remember the little struggle they had.
Yeah.
But yeah, they preferred the business community chose Bush over Gore, and he won.
What's up, David?
Nothing. I just wanted to call in. Wish you guys a happy New Year and. I really appreciated those last two calls I got to hear. I know there's a lot of people,
you know, and different things are going to get people active and agitated and whatever it is, you know, go for it, you know, look into it, you know, and like Jonathan was saying, more often than not, you might have a certain passion, but there are going to be other issues that are going to grab your attention, hopefully, you know, get you more involved. And like John Chi was saying, you know, getting involved in a community where you're not only bouncing ideas off each other and supporting that, you know, that the learning and educational part of it, but actually getting involved in campaigns and actions, you know, everything from, you know, protests to direct action to, you know, simple little mundane things like calling congressmen and senators and things like that. So, you know, it runs the gamut of the actions and the activities that you can get involved in. And I think it's empowering, you know, when you see a group of, you know, four or five of you activists, you know, causing a ruckus and, you know, causing change at a grassroots level, you realize, wow, it doesn't take 5 million people to get together. You know, I think a lot of it, you know, unfortunately people have that idea that, you know, it takes like a zillion people to make any kind of change. But we've been having some major grassroots victories here in New York around redevelopment. Mayor Bloomberg, he's had some big development plans up in the Bronx. And through a grassroots coalition of activists and, you know, community groups, the city council not only voted down the development project in the King's Armory up in the Bronx, but overrode his veto, which is unheard of. It's like the first time this has happened, you know, with Bloomberg. So, you know, these things, you know, victories do happen. They're not going to make the front page of the New York Times all the time. But, you know, you really just have to get out there, you know, and find out what's going on in your community.
You know, that thing that Buttigieg just mentioned that is not going to be on the newspapers, that's very important. That remember, folks, that one of the purpose of the capitalist media is to discourage us from changing the system. So they're not going to – if every day you heard, you know, 10, 20 instances of people changing things. Oh, you know, did you hear that Johnny over there with his folks, you know, they protested something and they got higher, you know, they got a raise from the boss? Or, you know, did you hear about how these animals were? I mean, if you heard about these things all the time, you would feel empowered. You would feel much more encouraged to engage in some of these acts. But since you never hear about it, you think, hey, you know, I don't want to be all by myself doing this. I'm afraid. So and once again, it doesn't have to be a big thing, you know. And if you build a culture of resistance, it may be at your school, you may want to get rid of the, you know, whatever, the candy machine, or you want to like, I remember my teacher, you know, I had an English teacher, and she wanted to we thought the books were way overpriced. It was over $100 for a lousy book. So what did we do? We made photocopies, right? So there's ways to build a culture of resistance, and it doesn't have to be a huge thing right away, but you can work your way up.
Definitely. Yeah, it's you know, it takes and patience, you know. This thing I'm talking about with the redevelopment going on in the Bronx, some of these people have been active in this campaign for 10, 13 years. You know, and as anarchists, we often mention the Spanish Revolution. That, you know, that wasn't some spontaneous thing that just kind of happened. It was generations of struggle, you know, and it's hard to, you know, civil rights, another example, or the women's, you know, women's suffrage, or the labor movement, for, you know, all these things. That, you know, they weren't things that just people got together and, you know, won victories. You know, often generations of struggle, you may or may not see major victories in your lifetime. Unfortunately, that's the world we live in. But, you know, being part of that struggle in and of itself, I think, is rewarding because you're on the right side of history. You know, and so, you know, you really have to get out there and get involved. It's the only answer.
And also, since we're on the vein of discussing anarchism here and the next section that I wanted to discuss, which is a very important one, is section E of the Anarchist FAQ, and the question they pose is, what do anarchists think causes ecological problems? And, you know, it's just sort of logic that if you have a system, in which you treat human beings as cogs, in which you want to exploit human beings, and in which you want to, you're competing to get the most you can at the expense of nature, et cetera, et cetera. You know, which way are you going to treat nature? Is nature going to be treated the way it should be in a system like this? What do you think about that, Buttigieg?
Well, I mean, you know, as we know, capitalism commodifies everything. Sex, the environment, you know, grandma, as she's, you know, dealing with a hip replacement. Everything has to be commodified. I mean, you look at the way that the capitalists are trying to deal with climate change. How are they going to do it? Well, they have to commodify carbon. And then they have to figure out how to turn it into a market and trade it. And, you know, you see even the way the capitalists themselves are trying to grapple with these major issues, that it's just a recipe for disaster when everything has to be commodified. When the simple questions of, well, what's the right thing to do? What's good for the environment? What should we be doing? Oh, no. It has to work within this market system. And, you know, we just have to figure out a way to, you know, make capitalism green and all these other things. And it's just, it's not workable, you know? I mean, this whole cap and trade, it's just nonsense. You know, capitalism in and of itself, it's a system that's based on infinite expansion on a finite planet with finite resources. It's just impossible. You know, we only have this one little planet, you know, and capitalism has to continually expand. You look at any business, it's not expanding year after year after year. They're always talking about growth, right? GDP growth. That means however many widgets we produce this year, we've got to produce more next year and the year after.
Right.
Well,
the planet's
limited.
And also, I mean, the one solution that pro-capitalists always put forth as well, people have to choose to, buy a new light bulb that won't consume as much. They got to choose not to. But the thing is that if we do not control production, our ability to control our economic lives and our own desires, I mean, just remember, if we're wage slaves, we're not, first of all, we're not producing what we've chosen to produce. We produce what the capitalist system is imposing on us. We're not
what the market demands.
Yeah, what is profitable for the capitalist, the demands of the market, which as I've said and you've said many times, is not a democratic. It's a $1 one vote system in which all these needs are enhanced by advertising, by a culture of consumerism, in which other needs are not fulfilled. Community needs, relationship needs. So you buy more stuff to make yourself feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Tranchita, do you have any thoughts on this?
Oh, sorry, I'm chatting in the chat room.
Oh, okay.
Any questions? Any questions from the chat room, Tranchi?
Oh, no, but it's hopping. People are like shooting comments to each other left and right. It's really
great,
nice.
Great.
I wanted to ask you a question, Buttigieg, since you're a construction worker. If you, in your ideal society, let's say you were a construction worker in an anarchist society.
A carpenter, buddy.
That's right. A carpenter. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. What kind of projects do you think that you would be engaged in if you were trying to rebuild a new society?
Oh well, you know, I think, if we can imagine this taking place in the world we're living in now, right. I think the first thing that we would, as people who can build things. Would be to start rebuilding our nation's infrastructure. You know, it's in the dumps. And they'd be rebuilding the roads, creating mass transit on a scale that we haven't seen to bring us up to, you know, a functioning, decent society. Ending, you know, really destroying much of the urban sprawl that we have in this country. And, you know, seriously planning real, viable, living, sustainable communities where people aren't spending 2 hours, 4 hours a day on the road driving to work. I mean, you know, all these things. But, you know, rebuilding our nation's infrastructure, the bridges and the power grids and the roads and all these different things, like I said, there's plenty of work to be done. Unfortunately, much of what we do in construction, you know, we have 18 million vacant homes. Think how wasteful capitalism is. It's like they overshot the mark on houses by 18 million. 18 million homes that were, you know, didn't need to be built, and yet were built because, you know, capitalism just keep building, keep building, keep building. So if you're, you know, you work in the auto industry, you just keep building Hummers until there's nothing left in the planet. You know, just use up every resource there is, and, you know, that's what capitalism does. It doesn't build things for people's needs.
Hey, Buttigieg, we have another call on the line. Let's see if we can answer him or her.
Sure.
Let me see. Hello there. What's your name?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Joey.
Hey,
yo, Joey.
Boy, we have the whole family here. Nice.
Yay.
Happy New Year. Show. Yeah.
I'm messing with Nuclear Light in the chat room.
Oh, she's in the chat room? Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, Nuclear Light.
But yeah, so... Anyways, you guys are talking about capitalism and the environment and stuff. I wanted to give everybody a heads up about a really great publication called Turbulence. Turbulence 5 just came out, and I put the link up in the chat room. If we get around to it, you know, maybe one of my shows on Tuesday or whatever, we can talk about some of the articles in there. But basically, this whole entire issue is devoted to the problems with, you know, green capitalism, mm-hmm. and it also does a lot with the theory of the commons,
right,
which is a pretty big deal at the moment. But yeah, so they did a really good job with this latest issue, Turbulence. The one before, if you guys had seen it or whatever, had a little rocket guy on it. And it was pretty cool too. But this one's a bigger format, not a little magazine format, more like a half newspaper format. And just to give you a heads up, David, on January 12th, they're doing a Turbulence relief event at Blue Stockings.
Okay. Oh, cool. Yeah, I'm on. I get all the stuff from Blue Stockings. I go down there a lot. So, yeah, it's one
of our cool spots. For Turbulence here in town, probably late January, early February.
Joey.
Cool. I've already got a copy of it. It's awesome.
Can I ask you, you mentioned the commons. Did you notice the woman who won the Nobel Prize in Economics this year? And Eleanor Ostrom, I think is her name?
Yeah, we actually talked about that in one of the shows. We talked about it.
Yeah, really cool, you know. Our work validating that commons have been, you know, successfully managed, something we've said a lot, you know, over the years. And, you know, she used empirical evidence. Unlike Garrett Harding, she didn't just make up a story. Like the capitalists always do. They like to make up little hypothetical stories and then say, see, it proves the wonders of the market. You know, so, yeah. I mean, it is what it is, the Nobel Prize in Economics. But still, I think it's empowering and positive to see somebody like that with that kind of work being recognized.
We have a question.
I'm not sure about her specifically, but it's at least cool to see those sorts of things be recognized on like a global scale. But I'm going to hang up and let you guys finish out the show.
Thanks, Joe.
See you later. Yeah. Happy New Year, everyone.
You too.
Well, we have a question from the audience. What do anarchists think about gun control? And I'll just give you a quick, we only have a minute. Basically, guns are like any other type of authority. You may need them sometimes, but right now, thinking about all the workers that get killed every year in construction work and other...
90 seconds.
I think forming a union or getting organized is going to defend you against these things much more than a gun. A gun may not help you. In fact, very often if you buy a gun, you may end up committing suicide because our society is so fucked that you may use it against yourself. So you got to be careful about those things. We're not against guns per se. At least I'm not. But we have to prioritize. Any last comments, Buttigieg or Charchi?
60 seconds.
Oh yeah, about guns. I really don't have a feeling on it. I feel kind of like you do that there's more important things. I'm not trying to take anybody's guns away. I don't really want a gun. I think, like you said, the work that we have, it's not going to be fought with guns. It's, you know, we have to organize and resist. And, you know, that's what we need to do.
Okay, we're going to play 5 Million Ways to Kill a CEO. And
yeah.
Have a nice weekend, all right, folks, guys. And we will see you next
Happy
Monday.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thank you, Charanchi. Thank you, Buddha Jam. Thank you, listeners. See you next week.
Working you while we happy just to work a day. But I'ma slap until my blood starts circulating. Do you check that elasticity? Did they cut off your electricity? Did you scream and yell explicitly? What's the boss in too complicity? I'm a white coat sizzle, but I'm such a pencil. Rolling dope fiend rentals to your residential. Talk as fuck eating little with no utensil. Finna teach pimp class with a whole credential. They own sweatshops, fat cops, and just a cola. Murder babies with their molars on the air Fiona. Control the Pope, Dalai Lama, holy rollers, and the Ayatollah. Bump the rolling in your bucket or you need to roll up. If you might catch me on the scenic route with my penis out. Getting swans for the executives with the meanest mouth. Wanna know what this demeanor's about? Did they try to clean us out? Greenest flowers, shut them down. I ain't never seen a drought. In the pool, they ain't calling you back. For the record, I ain't called it a gag. Protect this in the small of your back. When you back.